With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini, represented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Dieter Kurtenbach and I have an interesting topic that we want to discuss about the NBA. Basically, the idea of this podcast is going to be, who are the people within the NBA that are most going to shape the NBA over the course of the next calendar year? So basically, who will shape the NBA in 2019 above anyone else? Dieter, you and I kind of texted back and forth. I was like out shopping, like on La Brea yesterday, like looking for jeans and looking for shoes and stuff while we were texting. I realized how like out of the fashion game I am whenever I go to stores like this that are like supposed to be super like cool stores, and I'm just like
the thought of you in those stores makes me giggle.
Yeah, like I you know, doing okay. Like I figure I should try and like get the fashion game going again, you know, maybe maybe not even like get the fashion game going again, but going for the first time in my life.
Establish it. Create a baseline, yeah.
You know, I'm going to be 30, I guess, in the next 13 months. So I need to do something, I feel like.
Yeah. Here's my advice on that as someone who is on the wrong side of 30. Don't bother. It's not worth the effort. It's not worth the money. It's never going to happen. I am, in fact, fighting. I have never been part of any wave. At least any wave that is still rolling onto the shore. It's way too difficult. It's just way, like, I was on Nike. I want to buy a pair. I have craved for my entire life, okay, a pair of Jordan 1s. I remember specifically going to the shoe store near the house I grew up at, shoe store, which was a novel concept back in the day. And there were a pair of Jordan 1s. I guess it was a restock of some sort. This probably would have been 94, 95.
How many pair of Jordan 1s do you own right now?
Zero.
Oh, wow.
I don't own any Jordans at all. And
I think I have three pair of Jordan 1s.
Yeah. And so I've always wanted them, but they've never been really a practical buy for me. And beyond that, I wear a size 16 shoe. So while, yes, it's a basketball shoe,
yeah,
it does make it tricky because I'm also not dropping $220 on one pair of shoes. Like, I don't like shoes. I love shoes, but I would rather diversify more my portfolio for that $220. I'd rather get three pairs of shoes. So I've been kind of on the market looking around for sort of this holy grail of Jordan 1s. And the other night, I'm on the Nike website, and I got a code, and I'm like, this might be the night. Like, I'm ready to do it. And I see a pair of Air Monarchs, the classic mow your lawn dad shoe, for $250 on Nike.com because it's signed by someone who I've never heard of, and I didn't even have the energy to Google. And like, they blew out like the heel of them. I don't understand. It was like they had tumors on them, and it had a signature, and that's now a $250 shoe. Like, Ron Adams, the old assistant coach of the Warriors, wears Air Monarchs. Like, Pete Carroll wears Air Monarchs, and now they're somehow like a hype beast thing. Like, I the culture's gone too far. I give up. Like, just let the wave come to you, because it's certainly not worth trying to catch anything, because it's nonsensical bullshit. Like, they're just making this up as they go along and justifying their inclusion in some weird club. I just gave up. I'm just going to keep wearing Eddie Bauer and like $40 Adidas fucking suede shoes that are, you know, fine, like, you know, like old superstars. Like, that's it. I'm just like, and if that becomes a wave, cool. And if it doesn't, fine.
Oh my god, Teeter.
Don't spend so much fucking money. Like, don't go. I have nice jeans. I wear like $180 jeans mainly because.
See, like I struggle with that part of it. Like, because I don't
normal people clothes.
Yeah, that's true. Like, but like we went to a store down here yesterday that was selling jeans for like $200, and I was okay. Like.
That's not crazy. Like, if it is, it's stupid. But once you've accepted that threshold as something you're willing to do, it's not insane.
I just feel like I can get good jeans for, like, $70.
You can.
Yeah. Like, I can. Yeah. Yeah, for yeah. sure.
Like, so let I'm me like, tell you something. Like, Old Navy actually makes a decent jean.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Like, I buy jeans from American Eagle regularly. And, like, I'm comfortable with that. But, like, they're nice jeans. Like, sometimes... Yeah, like sometimes you have to buy new ones. Like I probably have to buy new American Eagle jeans at a rate higher than what I would have to buy like $220 jeans, right?
No. No. That's a misnomer. I buy AG jeans. They got a little bit of elastic in them. You know, they look pretty good. I have a bunch of like dress pants that are AG. Like I'm a big AG guy, and I'll buy them like Nordstrom Rack when they go on super sale and hope that you know, I win the lottery when it comes to my size, which is 34 or 30, 38, 36.
Jesus.
Wishful thinking on the 34th. And then, but I have one pair of jeans like that, but like they'll blow out. Like that's the thing. If they're really nice, like it's typically a more, they're not exactly dungarees here. Like they're going to blow out in the crotchal region. They're going to, you know, like if you are sitting on hard seats, like the pockets will bust out. Like that is what it is. You need to establish a good tailor. Whereas you get them repaired. I guess there's more of a positivity to that. There's more of a, they get a little bit of character in that regard, which you're certainly not buying the character. And then, but you know, if you get like an Old Navy pair or you go to Walmart and buy some Wranglers, like you can just keep buying, like, okay, well the ass, you know, the ass pocket blew out or there's a hole there. Like, okay, I'll just go buy another pair. And I don't know what the right answer on that one is, but you're definitely not like buying quality with 200. In fact, you're probably getting a better quality with the lower cost jean because there's some real fucking denim to them as opposed to like them trying to turn them into yoga pants that look like jeans.
Hot fashion takes from Dieter and Sam.
I will give you one great piece of advice, though. This is a legit piece of advice when it comes to fashion. And you should take this with 1,000 grains of salt, but I do think that this stands up. The Lululemon pants are incredible.
Yeah, yeah, you've told me about those before. You are big on the Lululemon pants. I've been looking for sweatpants. I should probably do that.
They're not sweatpants. They look exactly like I have a pair of blue. I couldn't remember colors. Blue Lululemon pants that look exactly like the pants I have for a blue suit. And so I'm like, that's an easy swap. And it's just fucking fantastic. And I swear no one would ever know. Like they're the same level of like sheen as like a nice silk suit that I paid a bunch of money for.
It's going to be hilarious. Like, you know, like if my wedding comes around in August and if you and Heather come down for it, I'm going to look at you during my wedding and you're wearing those fucking Lululemon pants.
Maybe
and
I'll I'm be wearing shorts. This is another wave that I'm just going to hope sticks around.
Oh my God.
They'll be Lululemons, but they'll be shorts.
Oh my
best
God.
Best of luck with that. I'm going full AC/DC.
It is an outdoor wedding in the middle of August, so I would not even
in
like
the Southland. Yeah, you bet your ass I'm wearing the shorts.
Oh my God!
This sweaty boy is not busting out the full suit for you.
Oh, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
You're going to be dripping the entire time. You're going to be dripping. Why are you doing that? Is everyone going to get a personal fan as a wedding gift?
That's not a bad idea. I'm seriously bringing this up to Laura later.
Here's your sister.
let's get into this. So we've got a list of like 12 or 13 people here. Realistically, well, 12 or 13 topics. It's something like 18 people because the one topic has 5 or 6 guys. Yeah. And our goal here is just to discuss how these guys will shape the NBA over the next year. To me personally, I don't think that any singular person will shape the NBA more this year than Kevin Durant in calendar 2019. The reason that I say that is, A, he's a player. B, he is the finals MVP, two-time reigning finals MVP. C, he's holding kind of the NBA hostage right now mm-hmm. with his free agency situation. Like, you know, he might not like that terminology necessarily, but it is a real factor right now. And it also, like, gives us real reason to discuss here. Like, the Warriors lost to the Suns last night. This is...
What?
Like, not something that happens, right?
So they hadn't done it in 4 years, 19 games.
So, like, let's just kind of discuss, A, what do you think makes Kevin Durant the most important player or person in the NBA? Because not all these guys are players.
Right.
And B, I mean, like, where do we go from here with the Warriors?
Well, the reason that Durant is the most important player in the league for the next 6 months or so, or until he at least signs somewhere, is because he's arguably the greatest scorer in NBA history. And he's 30 years old. He is in his prime. He plays for a team that we might not have noticed it last night when they lost to the Suns, but plays for a team that is, when they are on, head and shoulders, I would argue, better than the rest of the NBA. Mm-hmm. And his decision to stay with that team long-term or go elsewhere obviously would have a massive effect on not just the leader in the clubhouse for the title every year and a dynasty. It would also bring up another team if he goes somewhere else. So Kevin Durant is the embodiment of what so many players say is the truth. It's a player empowerment league, and he holds all the cards. He can make or break a dynasty. He can make or break a low-level franchise. It doesn't take a lot to infer what I'm getting at by saying that. So I don't know what he's going to do. I think that the breadcrumbs all lead one direction, but those are just breadcrumbs. And where the Warriors are at right now, they're not in a happy place. I don't know if that necessarily means anything when it comes to wins and losses, because they are admittedly bored by the regular season. I don't think that that's a great thing to openly admit. I don't think that that's something that can just be brushed aside very easily, and you just presume that they'll turn it on at the right time and that they have established the correct habits this season to win another championship. But that's where this team is. They are extremely confident that they are still the best team in the league. They have shown in spurts that they are, in fact, that. And despite the fact that they are full of angst and no one seems to be in a good mood, and Kevin in particular is icy, that's the nice way of putting it, and has not de-thawed or has not thawed since that famous grow up press conference. And in fact, it's gotten only a little bit chippier. I mean, he's like seeking out fights now, it seems. Despite all of that, and despite the negative mood, you would have to still favor them to win the championship, just given the amount of talent that they have, which again references the initial point. The reason that they are supremely talented isn't because of the bench. It isn't, you know, because they've been developing young players. It's because they signed Kevin Durant, and they have five all-stars in their starting lineup right now. They're not all playing like all-stars, but they have five all-stars. And if you lose Durant, who we can argue if he's number one or number two in that hierarchy, it just changes the entire complexion of the team. And a player of that level, it would just change the entire complexion of the NBA.
Yeah, and I think that the big thing about that is Draymond Green has been, for differing reasons, be it injury, be it just lack of give a shit about the regular season.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't been what he's been in the past. And honestly, he is someone that you talk to NBA executives around the league, there's real concern about giving him like huge money on a long-term deal.
No question. Like,
that is something you've been told, I assume, as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's concerns mainly. And listen, and this is going to bubble up now in the next couple of days, regardless, because You saw Steve Kerr last night in that loss to the Suns late in the fourth quarter say, if the lip readers are to be believed, and it looks right to me, I'm so fucking sick of Draymond shit.
I get that.
Like, I don't think that it's that big of a deal, but it's a thing. And it has to be.
Here's the thing. It's not a big deal at all. That stuff annoys me because, like, coaches say that shit about players all the time. It just never gets caught, right? Like, this is not something that is abnormal.
No. And these guys have got, these guys have a hot and cold relationship because they're, contrary to what you might initially believe, they're wired in extremely similar ways.
Right. Like, it's just not, that's not a big deal to me. And I don't really care about that. What I care about is we need to know more about what's happening with Draymond. And we'll talk about Draymond here whenever we get to the second guy. But, like, his play is critical to the idea of, you know, what Kevin Durant decides to do. And the reason for that is if you believe Draymond is lesser than what Draymond has been over the course of the last 5 years, and if you believe that, you know, Klay Thompson, I think Klay's probably fine.
Klay's a max guy. You can't overthink that one. I mean, he's steady as she goes.
So if you believe that Dray is a little bit less than what he has been in the past, and you believe that Klay, who is, I believe, 29 now, turned 29 this year. So you're essentially paying him for his age 30 season next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you believe he is slightly less than what he's been, not a lot less, but just slightly less
in the years to come.
Right. Then you're talking about a team that is no longer really like a crazy super team. Right.
No. If Kevin Durant leaves, you lose your crazy super team status. In fact, you could argue, given this season, this was something I was thinking about. I didn't write it last night, but it was something I was thinking about this morning as I kind of did the autopsy on my column from last night's game. You can argue that this team, given the current mood and state and angst that it has, needs to be shook up this offseason regardless of Durant's decision. Like, that it might be better in some way if Durant just takes care of this himself, because these guys do not seem to enjoy anything they're doing right now. And I'm not sure that that's going to change come playoff time, because then it becomes this almost compulsory, well, we're the best team, we have to go out and win thing. Like, there's no joy in Mudville right now. And that is what it is. It's not necessarily unexpected. This team has been together in some way, shape, or form for 4 years now. They have gone to four straight NBA finals. They're looking to go to a fifth. That is unprecedented since the Celtics. There's a reason it's been unprecedented since the Celtics, and we're seeing a lot of those reasons come to fruition for this team right now. They are not deep. They are extremely top-heavy. They are figuring out a lot of things on the fly because of the Cousins situation. Cousins, in theory, is gone, though he's been so underwhelming that he might come back for another make-it-or-break-it year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that Durant is the cause of all of this angst because he's held this looming free agency over this team's head. He sort of lorded over the team earlier in the season, and now he's just angry all the time, it seems. That negative energy has now spread to other parts of the locker room. You could argue that this is a short-lived thing, because if they beat the Rockets, then everyone's going to go back and say, oh, they flipped the switch back, and they're so excellent, and they're obviously the number one team in the NBA, and it was stupid we ever doubted them, and they were just bored against the Suns, this and that. Andrew Bogut's coming in. He's an old, you know, an old personality that they know. He might help unlock some stuff. There's a lot, but I can't escape that notion that this needs to stop, that they need to do something different and reinvent themselves in a certain way this upcoming offseason, because this has run its course. And that might be Draymond. That might be Kevin taking, you know, if Kevin resigns, that maybe they have to, you know, look in other ways. And that might be moving on from Draymond, who still has a year left on his contract and who wants a full max after signing with Clutch Sports. Even if he doesn't necessarily deserve a full max going forward, he wants it for time served, because the way he sees it, he took a he took a discount on his last extension and has out-earned that, and it's kind of hard to argue with that. So he wants to be made whole on his next deal, even though you're really not supposed to pay dudes for what they're about to do.
Yeah, that's really not the way this works. And like I said, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But with the Warriors, let's just kind of jump into like the debacle that was losing to the Phoenix Suns, yeah, and what this all means going forward. I still don't think it means much, but yeah, you know, you and I texted last night. Like,
yeah,
I do think that there is just one voice in that locker room that could kind of bring this all together, like if things really get disastrous. And I don't think we're at that stage yet. Like, they just beat the Nuggets by 17 on Friday.
Yeah, we're not at the Warriors, beat the 1 or 5.
Yeah, they beat the 76ers on the road last week. Like, this is not a disaster scenario. Now, like,
they did both of those things while being moody, though. Moody is the nice way of putting it.
So, like, here's the thing. Wednesday at Houston, Saturday at Oklahoma City, Monday at San Antonio, like, right, three games in a row here that will test them. Like, they do need, they don't need to do anything because they are the champions and they're very clearly the most talented team. But I think that the three game stretch will tell us a lot about where they are. And if it goes poorly and if this starts to spiral, I just look at this as like, look, I know Stephen Curry isn't exactly like the most vocal human being when it comes to like basketball locker room dynamics.
No.
But I also do believe that he would step up if the time came, because at the end of the day, we can talk about Kevin Durant, we can talk about Steve Kerr, we can talk about Joe Lacob, we can talk about top to bottom everyone in this Warriors organization. Nobody's voice means more than Steph. Nobody's voice means more. And
it's not a voice that's used very frequently, though.
It's not a voice that's used very frequently, but it's a voice that matters above all other voices. And I think that if this thing started to spiral, it would come. I think that he would be the guy to step up and really decide, hey, I need to do something here. Like,
it's a nice notion, and I can't necessarily disagree with it, but it does feel to me as if the Steph stepping up and giving a rah-rah speech in the locker room to pull everybody together, one, could have negative consequences.
I don't know that I agree with that necessarily.
I don't know if I'm saying it. I'm just saying it needs to at least be considered as part of this calculus. And the second part,
but like, we're talking about this as like a break glass in case of emergency.
That was the
scenario.
Exact terminology I was about to use. It's a break glass in case of emergency. We are not in a full state of emergency yet. But if we get to that point, we've never been to that point with this team yet. We don't know what that state feels like.
What does that look like?
Steph is all that effective at this. We're just, now you're just throwing shit on the wall in a way and hoping that it sticks. And because I think we both hold Steph in high esteem, we're presuming that that would be worthwhile. I don't know, because it's never happened before. So yeah. Just the presumption of, oh, well, Steph will get him in line. Like, can Steph get him in line? Maybe
it's a real question. Yeah.
Maybe he's quiet in the locker room because he knows that that's not something he's great at, you know? He does his his leadership is quiet, confidence, lead by example. And this is a guy who has not opened his mouth once, at least publicly, and to my understanding, privately, complaining about the fact that, you know, Durant will just steal possessions from sort of the egalitarian 5-on-5 Steph-led offense. And it certainly happened with Cousins. I mean, he's been the one happy to sacrifice a lot of nights' shots in order to get Cousins touches to theoretically get him to a place where he can be effective in the playoffs. Like, that's Steph's leadership. And Steph is also on a long-term deal. He signed that 5-year deal last year. And so,
right. And again, I think that is
what, long-term, and he's always been a long con guy.
But I think that's what makes him the most likely to have to do something in a break glass in case of emergency scenario, because he's the one that's most secure there. He's the one that is very clearly the most important piece of the entire organization. Like, it's got to be him.
He's also the one who's most locked in.
Yeah, maybe he's not the one that is most likely, but he's the one that needs to do it the most. If push comes to shove here.
It is interesting because usually the guy who will do stuff like that is Draymond. And if Draymond, and this is why the Kerr thing matters, even though I do think it will blow over without much of an issue. I mean, if this team could generally put behind him telling Kevin Durant, Draymond telling Kevin Durant, you're a bitch and we don't need you early in the season. And like, listen, that's going to linger in the back of everyone's mind forever. But I don't think that that's been a big time issue over the last couple of months. If you can put that behind him, like, then I agree. Like Steve Curtis saying you're so tired of Draymond shit and having a weak moment of honesty is not going to be a thing. But if Draymond, I don't know if Draymond knew about it when he left the locker room in kind of a huff last night. I would like to presume that he did, but I don't want to state something that I don't truly know in that regard. He might hold it against Steve. There's enough bad energy to where stuff like this can linger in that locker room. So I don't know if Draymond's going to step up and say something if they go out and get their ass kicked by the Rockets. I don't know. You know, Kevin, who is also somebody who's willing to speak up in scenarios like that, right or wrong. I don't think that he's going to be, you know, calling for everybody to band together in the locker room when, you know, if they go out and lose to the Rockets. Like, I just don't know where this leadership is coming from at this moment. And in terms of the emergency where you need to break glass, I just don't know if we can necessarily presume that Steph will also be excellent at rah-rah speeches as he is seemingly with everything else.
Regardless, Kevin Durant, most important player, I think, going forward over the course next year. So I was.
We had some conversations about this one
on who to put at number one, because I do think that Rich Paul just has his hands in so many different baskets this summer,
including the one we were just talking about, because he is now Draymond Green's agent.
Right. Is that done, by the way? I know it was reported that it's happening.
If it's reported, it's done. I mean, we understand how this cycle works.
So Rich Paul has his hands in the Lakers, obviously, because of LeBron.
No question.
He's Anthony Davis's agent, so he will be handling those negotiations in part.
Fun times.
He has Draymond Green.
Yep.
Now, and as Dieter said, Draymond Green is going to want a contract of some sort.
He probably wants the whole pass, baby.
Yes. Or like maybe
he wants it. He wants it, and he might be considerate of a little bit less. But that negotiation could go sour fast if the Warriors don't come at a number where Draymond doesn't want it. Draymond's locker's next to Andre Iguodala, and Andre Iguodala milked some extra money out of the Warriors. And you can't say that necessarily it wasn't worth it. But Andre Iguodala is a deft operator, and Draymond's out for the full bag. And the Warriors better bring it, otherwise there's going to be a problem.
Right. So I'm trying to remember, like, what is his potential extension number? I don't think that it's full max. Like, I don't think it's...
Well, that's one of the big reasons that he's been openly gunning for Defensive Player of the Year, because if he wins it twice, then he gets super max or full max. I don't know. You're better.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, 6. So this is his seventh year. So he will now be eligible for 30% of the cap. He might be able to get there in terms of an extension. He might be able to get close to being able to get 30% on an extension. And if it's not 30%, it is
close-ish,
I would say, to 30%. And
this is the other thing with Draymond. Like, yes,
I just haven't done the math on this ahead of time. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of
it's okay. I should I should probably have it, and yet I'm not even close, so I appreciate your effort. The other thing with Draymond, too, is how do you value the sort of ethereal stuff that Draymond brings, being the heart and soul of a defense that hasn't really engaged at all this year? It's a lot of things that don't necessarily translate to obvious money in the way that, like, a guy who can go out and score 25 points per game. There's a very clear barometer for how you pay that kind of guy. Draymond's viable to not score any points and be the most important player on the court. So there's not a lot of comparables here. He certainly holds himself in high esteem. I hold him in extremely high esteem. I can understand 100% why he would want the full bag, but it is tricky because, again, who do you compare Draymond Green to? He's almost a one-off in this league, and if the Warriors are trying to save some money because they're going to have to pay $2 on every dollar that they spend going forward because of the luxury tax, regardless of if Durant sticks around or not, if they're going to get crafty with this, that could be a real issue.
So, for what it's worth, the Warriors can only give Draymond $22.2 million to start his next contract. So it would be the 2019-20 season that is locked in for $18 million would exist. And then the next year on top of that, the 2021 year, would be at $22.2 million. He's going to want more than that. So there's no I would be shocked.
He turned down a three-year contract extension this past offseason. I don't expect him to sign an extension this upcoming summer. I would think that he would hit the market in full when he becomes a free agent after next year. And that doesn't preclude him from re-signing with the Warriors, but I do expect him to entertain other offers.
Which, by the way, another reason that he'll do that, the 2020 free agency class is, woo boy, is it a disaster. it makes a lot of sense for him to do so.
Yeah. Good time.
So, with Dre, there's just kind of a lot going on there, and we can move to him later.
That's like Rich Paul's least interesting client right now.
Right. So, like, Draymond Green, the question with Draymond is if Kevin leaves and the Warriors decide they need to shake things up.
I don't think Kevin has anything to do with it. I really don't think Kevin has anything to do with it.
I do. I definitely believe that if Kevin Durant leaves, I could see the Warriors going, the best way for us to shake this up outside of Kevin is by moving Draymond with 1 year left on his contract. And then
I don't know why I said that. I don't think that has anything. Like, clearly that has something to do. I said that like 10 minutes ago.
Derive value that way.
Yep.
And Rich Paul would be involved in that. Like, finding a place that Draymond is willing to re-sign with, finding a place that makes a lot of sense for him. Like, Miami makes a lot of sense for him. But does Miami make sense for Golden State? I don't know. Because the best way to derive value out of that scenario is trading him to a place he would be willing to re-sign. And, you know, I think it's going to have to be a contender. I think it's going to have to be a team that probably has like a good city. I don't know that it's going to have to be like an incredible city, but like he's probably going to want to go coastal.
Detroit has always been brought up, but I don't know if there's a path for him to go there, particularly one that works for the Warriors.
Yeah, like I don't really see how Detroit works for the Warriors.
He entertained the notion of going to Detroit, his hometown team, or at least his home state team, last go around in free agency or quasi free agency.
I mean, the Clippers are semi interesting.
It'd be interesting. Yeah.
If only because they have like the way to do it. Like, you could do Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell to make the money work.
Yeah. You can argue that those guys provide something similar in a way.
I'm just saying in terms of the money. I'm not saying in terms of the actual money, value.
I just don't know if you, again, just the same reason that it's hard to figure out what Draymond Green is actually worth. It's hard to get anything what you would argue fair value back for a guy like Draymond Green, even one who's declining. So,
right. And if you're the Clippers, the idea there would be you would still have two max cap spaces and Draymond Green if you would do that.
Right. But the Warriors, here's the thing, like the Warriors are not going to be the Death Star if they lose Kevin Durant, but they're still going to be good. They're still going to be a playoff team.
Right.
They still have Steph and Clay. And you know, a clever GM in theory that can maybe make something happen. But I agree with you that they would try to move on from Draymond and even just to open up some cap space for Giannis down the line or something. But
I think it's an option. I don't know that it's agent. Yeah, like I don't know that it's going to happen. I just think it's an option that they'll consider more than anything, and it's something that Rich Paul will be involved in. The obvious one is just Rich Paul dealing with Anthony Davis this summer. Anthony Davis is a top five player in the NBA who will be traded this summer. We know that for a fact now. Will it be Boston who can give the best offer? Will it be the team that gets the number one overall pick if it's the Knicks? Will it be someone that we don't really see coming? Like, I don't really know like who that could be necessarily.
I do know that Rich Paul will entertain all options, and that Anthony Davis has wanted to get more notoriety for his skill set amongst his NBA brethren for quite a while now. So I would imagine it would be a big market team that has a chance to go deep into the playoffs. I guess that really only leaves Boston, considering the state of the Lakers, but who knows?
So, like, I mean, the crazy thing
Clippers.
That...
Maybe it's the Clippers.
That's what I was going to say. Like, the crazy thing is... So if you're the Pelicans and you value Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in like a substantial way, you could do something like
I love Shea, but come on,
yeah, like you could do something like Shea, like Landry Shamet, and like multiple firsts because they got all those picks from Philadelphia,
right?
And you can make the money work with Gallinari very easily.
I mean, we could also put the Benson family on this list because, like, or I guess Danny Ferry. Is Danny Ferry in charge there now?
For now. They're going to open up. Yeah, they're opening up for a full search. But
I mean, they're going to have to get a general manager at some point. I know Rich Paul calls the shots on this, but the Pelicans do have to be willing participants in a trade. And Lord knows they weren't the first time around.
Yeah, like, well, there was no reason for them to be. They weren't motivated to be last time. They will be motivated this time. The Clippers, I like, unless the Pelicans think Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is better than Jason Tatum in terms of a long-term prospect, I don't really see how that works.
I have no concept of how that would be the case.
In terms of
and again,
others,
I like Shea.
Yeah, like, Shea's really good. It's just, like, he's probably not quite there yet.
Nope.
So, like, Rich Paul is going to have to figure all of that out. And, like, obviously he wants to get him to the Lakers. The Lakers are an intriguing option. Brandon Ingram looked great before he was shut down for the season following a blood clot in his arm.
Yeah, which that's a dangerous...
Huge bummer.
That's really a dangerous thing to go into the off season with. I mean, it's a dangerous injury in general, but if that's something that is possibly repetitive, that's a major league... That's a major league deal because, I mean, didn't that... What was it that ended Chris Bosh's career? Wasn't it something similar?
So, Brandon Ingram's is deep vein thrombosis,
right,
which is like a blood clot in a very strange place. And in his case, I believe it was his arm. He has to go on blood thinners, and it's you just can't play when you're on blood thinners.
Yeah.
Because if you start bleeding, you can like bleed out and die.
Yeah.
In Chris Bosh's case... It was a pulmonary embolism that was like moving toward the heart, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And I don't remember if like he continued to develop them or not. Like, I feel like that was an issue there.
Just saying, you can't mess around with blood clots.
Yeah.
Blood clots are something that could very easily end a career. And
we're
not saying that's happening. And I certainly don't wish it to happen in any way, shape, or form. Hopefully this is a one-off and it's forgotten in short order, but I mean, that's something that if Brandon Ingram is on the trade block, I mean, Lakers obviously have to take it into consideration because he's one of their best players, but if he's being used as a trade piece, that makes things even more complicated. So alas, that's where this is at.
We'll see. I mean, like, he's still a valuable piece. He looked great.
He looked
over the course of the last
the stretch,
2 weeks,
yeah.
Like before he was hurt, like he looked amazing.
It was starting to click for him for, I would argue, the first time.
Right. Like, looked like a very real centerpiece in this deal.
The dude was playing his way to New Orleans.
Yeah. Kuzma's an interesting prospect. Lonzo Ball, I think, is a good prospect. Also shut down for the year by the Lakers. We'll get to Magic later. That's going to be a real possibility for Anthony Davis. Like, I know that people keep saying, like, you know, Boston very clearly is a better offer. I agree, if they put all of their pieces on the table, Boston is a better offer, but I don't think you should rule out the Lakers in this scenario. Boston and the Knicks, I think, are the other two. Like, if the Knicks get the number one overall pick, they can get Anthony Davis, and they can potentially get Kevin Durant. That's the easiest way to lure Kyrie Irving or Kemba Walker. Like, it's...
Yep.
Yeah. If you can move the number one overall pick, I think that's a home run for both sides, both New York and the Pelicans. But we'll see. We'll see if that's what they decide to do. So Rich Paul is going to have to navigate those waters. He has to navigate the waters with the Lakers, just trying to like find players to play with LeBron. Because just like the reports out of Los Angeles have not been great since they have gone on this losing streak. You hear stuff like, just being in the circles that we run in, that like, you know, no one is really happy having to deal with all of the just mess that comes with LeBron. It's harder to deal with everything that comes with LeBron in Los Angeles if the team is not winning. If the team is winning and has good players, I think that things would be different, and I think it would be fine. But that's a water that needs to be navigated for Rich Paul. We talked about Draymond Green. Ben Simmons is another thing. Like, Ben Simmons is up for an extension this summer.
Yeah, and there are more than rumblings that he's just going to turn that sumbitch down.
So this stuff happens every year. People right. talk about, like, hey, this guy's going to turn down this max offer sheet, or max, not offer sheet, max extension. I don't see it happening. I'll just be real.
I don't see it happening either, but there's a lot of smoke on this one.
There is. Like, Ben Simmons has been very, very player rights positive throughout the course of his early career. You can go back through the documentary that he did with Showtime. You can go back through any number of...
Didn't Deadspin do that and create some unreadable nonsense?
Yeah, like any number of non... you know. Any number of statements he's made publicly, like, he is very player rights positive, and the best way to exercise those rights, if you're Ben Simmons, would be to take the qualifying offer. If you want to get out of Philadelphia and you want to leave a scenario where you can be the guy for the next however many years, you can be the guy next to Joel Embiid, I guess is the way to put it. Okay, that's fine. I just don't see it happening. Like, I think he's going to resign. I think he is going to sign the extension, and maybe he signs a 4-year extension instead of a 5. Like, maybe that's the compromise. Maybe it's an opt out after 4, but I think he's signing it because I think it just makes the most sense to do so.
And it's not like being in Philly's a bad spot, but this shows the power Rich Paul has.
Right. Just like the fact that people are talking about this is a, like, maybe not likely outcome, but a potential outcome says a lot.
100% that nothing can be taken for granted when Rich Paul is the agent. And that's great. Honestly, that's fantastic. That's what I would want in my agent. We'll see. There's a lot going on. It seems ridiculous that he's number 2 on this list, given all of the tentacles that he has out there right now and all of the sentinels that are doing his bidding. But
Ben too. I mean, like, if Ben decides, or like if Ben threatens to take the qualifying offer,
right,
they, like, need to seriously consider trading him this summer.
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh,
yeah. I don't know that they will, but they need to think about it at least.
That's a fun game for Elton Brand. Congratulations. Yeah. You just walked into a hornet's nest. I mean, Elton Brand has been extremely aggressive. I love what he's doing in Philadelphia, but, like, he doesn't have any power against this.
Yeah, and, like, by the way, if you're
totally unfair.
If you're Philadelphia, like, do you take Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, and, like, picks? Like, is that a fair offer? I don't think it is. Quite for Ben.
I don't know if you could ever have a fair offer because we don't know what Ben Simmons is going to be. He's nowhere near a finished product, I would imagine. Now, you can argue the same for Ingram, but at least we have a better idea of what Ingram's game is going to be.
Better idea of what Ben's game is going to be.
No, I would argue that we have a better idea of what Ingram's game is right now, because if Ben develops any sort of jumper at any point, I think that opens up a world of possibilities for him and puts him into a hyper elite status if he's not already there.
Right.
Whereas Ingram, I don't think that he's ever going to be amongst the best players in the NBA. I think he's going to be a really solid number 2 or a bad team number 1.
I would take over, like, 0.5 all-star games for Brandon Ingram in his career. Like, I think he will make one.
Ben Simmons, what are we talking, 9?
Yeah, like, Ben will make many all-star games, throughout the course of his career.
Ben is a lock for the all-star game in perpetuity,
right.
Whereas we're talking 1 for Brandon Ingram, which I will take the over, but, man, especially if he gets to the Eastern Conference and Ben Simmons isn't there.
So, with Ben... it's hard to find the fair offer. Like, I don't necessarily know what it is. Like,
I don't think one exists. Maybe they trade him for Draymond and everybody just wallows in the ambiguity.
Like, is it maybe like can Boston put together something if they end up getting Anthony Davis?
Man, that would be wild. That'd be some wild stuff.
Like, it's hard. Like,
Sixers,
I don't know.
The Celtics made a trade for a star.
Is it Denver? Like, does Denver try and do this? Does, like, Denver say, you know what, we're going to try and go all in on Jokic and Ben Simmons? Like, that's a fascinating idea.
a center that wants to play on the outside and a guard that wants to play on the inside, I can get behind it.
Yeah, and they can both, like, you can basically just lead the break with anyone on the court at any time.
Yeah, basically you just need those two guys and then three guys who have no interest in dribbling whatsoever, just standing and ready to shoot threes. And you can play great defense. In considering Denver's excellence in finding guys that can do that just off the scrap heap, I'm really into this idea now. I'm just running it through my head real quick. And
like, by the way, the Lakers are the obvious fit for Simmons if he goes down this road. But right. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if that happens.
We don't know.
We're getting the cart ahead of the horse on this. But like,
that's kind of what we do in general, though.
It's kind of what we do on this podcast. We get the cart ahead of the horse.
Particularly this one. Let's go to the third guy.
I just want to mention real quick with Rich Paul, too.
This is important.
He's dealing with the Darius Bazley situation as well. So Darius Bazley decided to not go to college this year. He was committed to Syracuse. From what I was told, academics were all fine for him. Yeah. Like, it was not a situation where he was trying to avoid the academic rigors and the academic qualifying process that would come with getting into Syracuse and dealing with the NCAA clearinghouse. He just decided to not go to college. And how he ends up going through this draft process, I think, is going to be really important for the future, because I am strongly in favor of guys skipping college. Like, I think that there is a real avenue there for elite level players to go through. Darius Bazley is a level below the type of player that I think should go through that. Like, if I was Anthony Edwards this summer, who is committed to Georgia, the number one recruit in the country, I would seriously consider skipping college. But Darius Bazley is in a tougher spot because he's like a top 20 kid versus the number one kid. How his pre-draft process goes, where Rich Paul finds a place for him, because ultimately in this scenario, the agent is going to play a huge role in where Bazley gets drafted. It's going to be really interesting for the NBA draft process and the way that we develop players into the future. So
game changer.
So yeah, Rich Paul's got a lot going on. Next is Kyrie. I have Kyrie and Kawhi on like the same level. You mentioned that you want to talk about Kyrie first.
Yeah.
So both these guys are free agents that will play a role in shaping the title race this year. Kyrie's scenario obviously is just, you know, kind of
more bizarre. That's why I want to talk about it more.
Right. Like
Kawhi's is uninteresting. Like, he's going to the Clippers. Presumably, I mean, that there are other options. He can go a lot of other places, but like, Kawhi is not made a thing out of this, whereas Kyrie is absolutely made a thing out of all of this. And it has something to do with the Kevin Durant scenario. So just by association there, I think he wins the tiebreaker. But they're both of a similar ilk. They're just handling it in very different ways.
Right, and there was another report late last week that Kawhi does not want to play with LeBron. Forget who. I saw it on Pro Basketball Talk, but I don't know who originally reported it.
This is why the Lakers were so angry when the Pelicans did not want to engage, because there's only one guy who actually wants to play with LeBron, and it's Anthony Davis, and they couldn't make it happen.
Right. Like,
how frustrating would that be?
So the Warriors, Kings, Lakers, the Celtics went on the road and swept those three teams. They have the Clippers tonight as we record this podcast on Monday. Interesting in a lot of ways that the Celtics have figured this out. Jay King did some really great reporting about a plane ride that the Celtics took and really got back together, got back on the same page. They've all been very public about this plane ride, saying like, this is what did it, right? Like, this is what got us kind of feeling loose again, feeling normal again.
They're so moody.
It's a strange deal there, because
this is a bipolar team, man.
The craziest thing about all of this is that it's all so interconnected. Like everything within the first three players we've talked about, Kawhi is on his own island kind of, but like, totally. The first three players we've talked about now, Kevin Durant, Rich Paul, Kyrie, it's all connected, because Kevin Durant and Kyrie are connected because they're free agents that are friends and
they're best buds right now.
Yeah, speculation is that they want to play together. Anthony Davis plays a role in this, because if the Celtics can convince the Pelicans to trade Anthony Davis to the Celtics, then that gets Kyrie to potentially stay more. Oh, yeah. Kyrie has certainly been connected to the Lakers. Draymond Green doesn't really have a whole lot to do with this. Ben Simmons doesn't really have a whole lot to do with this. But like,
well, those guys are all connected to the Lakers because Rich Paul is the shadow governor.
Right. So like, everything is so interconnected here. It's all very incestuous in the way it's going to work this summer that it's hard to discuss these things without kind of jumping into other areas, right? Like, Rich Paul is going to play a role in where Kyrie goes, because ultimately if he tells the Celtics that Anthony Davis is not going to resign there and the Celtics don't call the bluff, then I don't know what happens with Kyrie.
It's a mess. And that's, and that, like, the Kawhi stuff is the antithesis of this, because I would almost argue that Kawhi is a better and more impactful player. And yet
Kawhi is definitely a better player than Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, full stop.
Fair enough. Yeah. But man, like, you just get none of this coming from him, and you have no idea if he even likes Toronto. I mean, you could get, in theory, you could have the same angst. We don't even know if Kyrie likes Boston. Like, we don't know any of this stuff. It's all a guessing game in a lot of regards. But Kyrie makes us keep guessing for one reason, which is that he's extremely active and talks a lot, and everything is coded and cryptic. And then there's the Kawhi stuff, where maybe everything's loaded, but we're just not picking up those vibes. Like, it's either both of these players, wherever they go, whichever team they are with next year and beyond, that is a major league deal. These guys are both of a star caliber. I don't think that's up for negotiation. So if you're a star in the NBA and you change teams, you make a team, and you can break a team. Lesser than the Kevin Durant effect, but similar in a lot of ways, because we're dealing with the same wavelength. So, yeah, ultimately the Kyrie thing is so messy and so peculiar and more interesting that you have to give him the nod. When it comes to Kawhi, though, maybe this is the tiebreaker for you, because you were having trouble discerning between the two of them on the ranking. Not that the ranking matters at all. This is totally arbitrary nonsense. But which team do you think has a better chance to compete for the title? Is it the Celtics or is it the Raptors?
I do think it's the Celtics at the end of the day, because I think the Celtics will pose more problems for the Warriors.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I don't think that you can play Marc Gasol really against the Warriors unless they play Cousins regularly, and I don't think when push comes to shove, the Warriors will play DeMarcus Cousins like a crazy.
Do not underestimate Steve Kerr's propensity to do weird shit with centers in playoff series.
Sure, but like, if they get down, they will figure it out. Boston, I think, can just pose a lot more problems for the Warriors. 100%. Realistically,
we just saw it on Tuesday,
right? So I would say them, and I would say that because of that, Kyrie can probably pose more of an issue. But the Raptors are really good, and the Celtics right now are in the 5 spot in the East.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to play one of Philadelphia or Indiana in the first round. That's a losable series. And then they're going to have to play Milwaukee in the second round, probably. That's a losable series. So, like, yeah, Boston is setting itself up.
Even if they are better than Toronto in a head-to-head, I mean, they might be so battle-scarred by the time they play the Raptors, whereas if the seeding told, the Raptors are playing the Nets, who, listen, I stand for the Nets, but that doesn't worry me.
Well, and then Boston needs more than anything, they need to get to the third spot, I think. The team that gets to the number 3 seed, the 76ers, Indiana, or Boston, will have a significant advantage, because they will only have to play 2 of Pistons. Those crazy series as opposed to 3 of them.
3, yeah. That's 100% right. I mean, that's the most interesting subplot of this NBA season that is not being discussed. The fact that the Pacers have not fallen off after the Oladipo injury, and that they are still mucking things up for teams like the Celtics and the 76ers by still pretending like they're in this bad boy, which they very well might be. They're playing good ball, though they've lost their last 2.
Well, here's the thing, too. Like, do I think the Pacers win a first-round series if they're against one of these teams? No. But a series against the Pacers is going to fucking drain you. Like, they are going to defend you. They are going to play tough. They're going to play physical. They're going to play...
Have fun with Miles Turner blocking 10 of your shots.
Right. Like, have fun having to have, like, Thaddeus Young lean on you for 40 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Bojan Bogdanovic is going to play physical with you on the perimeter. Their perimeter defenders are going to, like,
hit like you the God, on the perimeter. They're the Jazz of the Eastern Conference. Like, you don't fear them, but goddammit, are you angry when you have to play them?
Well, like I do fear the Jazz a little bit, by the way. Like, I think the Jazz can make a run. But, like, the Pacers are kind of like the old-school Jazz teams where they will be miserable to play and they will just, like, beat the shit out of you, basically. You might not, they might not win the series, but they will beat the shit out of you.
No question at all.
So
Kyrie, Kawhi.
Let's talk about Kawhi, because I think Kawhi is in a very different spot, just because, like you said, his free agency is. Do we have any
idea if he actually likes playing in Toronto?
I don't. I genuinely have no idea
about Kawhi now than before the trade happened.
I have zero idea if he likes playing in Toronto or not. Which
God bless that inscrutable man.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen.
This motherfucker is impressive.
I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea.
Everybody else is having public freakouts, and this dude is just, like, rocking his New Balance and going to work. And we should all be... The NBA could use a little bit more Kawhi these days.
Like, no idea what's going to happen with Kawhi. None. And I love it.
What if... Just... this dude could sign with the Kings.
No, he won't go that crazy. But, like, it's it is probably one of the Clippers or Toronto. Those seem to be the two places that are brought up most when you talk about this.
Toronto, like, wouldn't have been brought up last year, though. And so, I don't know. I guess we no one thought that Paul George was staying with the Thunder, and here we are. So, who the hell?
And, like, another part of this, too, is, like, the Clippers feel confident that they're getting everyone. Right? Like, the Clippers feel confident that they will pitch free agents and win. Whether or not that ends up being borne out to be true, we'll see. But I do think that there is something too. Hey, Kawhi Leonard is from Southern California. He will be able to essentially create his own super team with the Clippers. He is only 27, if I remember correctly. So there's like a lot of time here for him to figure this out. So yeah, I think that spot makes sense. Toronto also makes sense given that they're really good.
Yes.
And, you know, he could re-sign like on a 1-year deal there if he wants to really.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, like, he absolutely could. Wouldn't that be hilarious, though? Like, the 1-year deal, which allows players to sort of lord over their franchises and everything that Durant is doing with this and kind of causing problems in that regard. If Kawhi does it, like, just won't use the power of the one-year deal at all for political gain, to just be like, no, I just want to sign for 1 year. Like, it would be great if he just signed 1-year contracts for the rest of his career, because that's all. It's all he's. I don't get this guy, and it's awesome. It's fantastic.
I love it.
It's great that one of the NBA's unquestioned elite players.
And by the way,
absolutely nothing about.
Like, a team that makes a lot of sense for him, like, in terms of what we do know about what he values on the basketball floor, in terms of culture, Brooklyn makes a lot of sense for him, in terms of, like,
yes,
this is a team that values playing the right way. Sean Marks is there, was obviously in San Antonio with Kawhi Leonard, was, I believe, a part of the front office that drafted him. They play the right way in terms of caring about tough physical defense now. They're just missing the star power. Like, D'Angelo Russell is good and is potentially morphing into that, but he's not there yet. Does Kawhi
Leonard provide star power? Like, there's a difference between star power and great player.
That's what I mean, though. Like, star power. No,
I know. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, they just need the star power. Like, oh, hot damn. nothing says NBA superstar quite like Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Even though he is... He is up there, man. He's going to go down as one of the great players in NBA history, and I don't think we'll ever learn his middle name.
I really don't know his middle name. I have no idea. You could throw out any name right now. He does not have a middle name on Basketball Reference either, by the way. So, like,
there's no fucking way that's true. I was just making that shit up.
Yeah, like, we really...
What was Kawhi Leonard's middle name?
We don't know if Kawhi has a middle name. Let's see. Real GM.
Oh, it's Kawhi Anthony Leonard.
Real GM does not have a full name for Kawhi Leonard. So, like, we have no idea.
According to Google, Kawhi Anthony Leonard.
Is it really?
But listen, this is going off of Wikipedia, so who the hell knows?
So Wikipedia has it as Anthony. Like, this is not Anthony. You just, like,
but
joking,
But that's Wikipedia. I mean, I'm not seeing it on any official websites. Awesome. We have to get a full WAB investigation on this thing.
Is Kawhi's middle name actually Anthony?
Yeah. Or did just someone make that up and see how long? Weather balloon. Oh,
that's fucking hilarious. Let's go to number five. Number five here, I have Magic Johnson. Yeah. And
I had Magic not higher on my list, but you talked me out of it, and I think you made some excellent points.
So I think that part of it is that they're just – so Magic is going to have to make a decision on Luke Walton, right? Like, yep. Just going to have to, right?
Well, I mean, I think that decision has been made, but yeah.
Right.
It needs to be made public.
Right. Hilarious thing from Bill Oram's column on The Athletic today. After delivering James in July, Johnson ignored the pleas of the coaching staff that he retain Brooke Lopez and Julius Randle. Instead, he signed JaVale McGee, Michael Beasley, and Lance Stephenson.
He also ignored the pleas of every single person who knows anything about basketball. But I do appreciate Luke clapping back at a situation that has been eminently unfair to him.
Well, the funny thing about this is, like, we knew from the moment that Magic did that interview during Summer League where he talked about zigging
while
the Warriors are going to zag. Like, I watch every playoff series and saw this. Thanks, Magic. You did the bare minimum. You watched playoff series.
Like, you and millions of other people.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's hard.
We got to get shooters around LeBron. Let's sign Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo.
Like, I legit have respect for Magic Johnson and his basketball genius on the court. I have respect for Magic Johnson as a businessman who has made hundreds of millions of dollars investing in companies and being on boards of companies.
But as a basketball businessman, not so awesome.
Right. Like, basketball genius plus businessman genius does not equal basketball businessman genius. Like,
basketball businessman might be my new gnome de plume.
But, like,
Vincent Adultman, basketball businessman.
Is Magic Johnson the Vincent Adultman of NBA general manager?
There was a theory for a while that the Magic Johnson Twitter account was run by a German Shepherd dog, or no, a Golden Retriever dog.
Yeah, just like all positivity all the time.
It was just a smiling Golden Retriever, just happy at all times. And it was like, you read it back, and if you just kind of view it from the viewpoint of like a talking Golden Retriever from one of those movies in the late 80s, early 90s, it really did play the part. And I wish I could have that kind of positive energy. I certainly don't. That would be fantastic. I would love to be a Golden Retriever myself. But alas, we're not there either.
So Magic is going to have a lot to do. Magic has a max free agency spot this summer. If they miss out on Anthony Davis, which I wouldn't say is a sure thing. I wouldn't say is a sure thing, but I would say it's more likely than not that they miss out on Anthony Davis.
Okay, that's an interesting take. I just put it at 50-50, but sure, yeah.
But like, I think there's a better chance that Boston gets him, and I think that there is a real chance that, like, the team that gets number one overall throws that in a deal for Anthony Davis. Like, if the Knicks get number two overall, is there a chance that, like, the Pelicans value RJ Barrett at a significantly high level and say, like, RJ Barrett, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, and Frank Ntilikina for Anthony Davis? Like, is that a reason? Is that a better offer than what the Lakers can put on the table? Like, personally, I don't think it is, but are the Pelicans petty enough to just send him to the East? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, like, I think that all of this is rational. I'm saying that
we don't even know who the GM is. We don't even know who's going to make that decision. So
exactly right. So it's hard to really decide what the deal is. But let's say that the Lakers miss out on Anthony Davis. This gets hard. This gets really hard because, like, is Jimmy Butler interested in going there? Do they try and sign Jimmy Butler? Is Jimmy Butler just going to stay in Philadelphia?
Is that somebody you want?
I think Philadelphia is probably a better spot if Jimmy Butler just full on wants to win for the longest period of time that he can win. Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a better spot.
I'm saying more to the effect of is Jimmy Butler, given his size, his theoretical position, LeBron James, is that a match that even really works all that well for the Lakers? Or are they
not
just
really
hell
me.
Bent on star power no matter what?
Yeah, not really for me. But he'd at least be a star. Milwaukee, Chris Middleton. Like, Chris Middleton has publicly said he's very happy in Milwaukee. Milwaukee feels good about re-signing him. I don't think he leaves Milwaukee. The next place in terms of free agency is, like, then what, Kemba Walker, realistically, if we're throwing, if we're saying Kawhi is not going? Like, is it Klay Thompson, I guess? Yeah. Like, if Klay wants, we don't really know what drives Klay, necessarily, I guess, but...
I mean, we do. It's just not, it's like, not does Klay, what most other people are driven by.
Yeah, like, does Klay want to deal with the LeBron circus?
Klay is going to get a max from the Warriors, and I would imagine that he signs it.
That's kind of where I'm at. So, like, you're at Kemba Walker, who Kemba, by the way, is a guy that's, like, an honorable mention on this list. Yeah. We're going to run through a few names here at the end. And
we've gone through a couple of the names on it. I mean, you mentioned Jimmy Butler. He's an honorable mention on this one, too, because...
Yeah, we'll talk about them in a minute, because, like, Magic Johnson, I think, is, like, just fascinating in a lot of ways.
Like, it doesn't feel like Magic has as much agency as he should have, given his position with the team. And Rob Pelinka should be part of this as well. Like,
yeah, Rob Pelinka, I think, deserves to be mentioned as well. Like, is there a chance that they try and sign DeMarcus Cousins if they miss out on some of these guys?
Yeah. I don't think that's a good decision, but yeah.
Like, Kyrie has been mentioned with them now. I think that we should probably bring up Kyrie. I think New York or Boston is more likely, but we should bring him up. The funniest one is D'Angelo Russell. I can't imagine D'Angelo Russell re-signing there. I can't imagine Julius Randle, like, signing there.
That would be hilarious.
Like, Al Horford, I think, would rather just re-sign with Boston because that gives him a better chance to win.
Horford's got his money. I think that he'll be cool about it going forward.
Yeah, so, like, it's hard. Like, it's like Kemba Walker, then, is the guy that they probably spend on. And that's if Kemba leaves. And that's if Kemba decides that he would rather be in Los Angeles versus his hometown of New York, both of which have max cap spots in Brooklyn and the Knicks. So, like,
yeah,
if that's the scenario,
then that's LeBron, Kemba, and maybe Anthony Davis. That's an interesting 1-2-3.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that team probably wins a title, to be honest. LeBron, Kemba, and Anthony Davis. Like, I think that team wins a title. But that requires a lot to go right.
When would they do that? Possibly, I mean, listen, that's an awesome three-man unit, but, like,
I would legit say that that team would be favored to win a title next year.
Over a Durant Warriors.
Over a Durant-less Warriors, let's say.
Durant-less Warriors. Okay, yeah. So we've already, I mean, listen, I understand why your mind is there.
Let's say if Kevin Durant would leave the Warriors, I think that a Lakers with LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Kemba Walker is favored to win the title.
Yeah, I like it.
But, like, that requires them to get Anthony Davis, and we just said that the Lakers are probably second or third in the pecking order there. They're just second or third in the pecking order of everyone, it seems like, right now.
Yeah.
Which makes it really hard. They're probably going to get someone. They're killing it. Well, they're probably going to get someone. Like, we should feel good about that.
But how low on the list do they have to go?
Yeah, like, it's who. And I don't know who the who is there.
I don't know who the who is either. Maybe it's Zion.
It'd be really funny if they won the lottery. If the Lakers win the lottery.
Riots. There would be riots.
I would laugh so hard. My initial tweet would literally be 280 characters of me laughing.
God, that'd be incredible. I'm still rooting for the Knicks. The Knicks are still the team that I root for to get Zion, just because of the chaos that would ensue from that.
I want either Phoenix or Atlanta to end up with Zion, because they have
Atlanta
done.
That would be awesome.
Atlanta has done this the right way so far. I think it would be earned.
They deserve the good karma.
Phoenix, I think, like, if you put DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, and Zion together, and by the way, Zion Williamson, another guy that's on this list of people who will shape the NBA over the course of the next year, Zion Williamson 100% is one of the, like, 15 most important people in basketball right now.
I mean, you could argue that he's number two on this list or number three on this list behind Rich Paul. The problem is Zion has no agency over where he goes.
And he can't shape the title race this year either. Like, I don't think you can make a case for him top five just because, like, he's not shaping the title race and he has no agency. But, in terms of guys who will be, like, the biggest story in the NBA next year, he is going to be in the top five of that.
Where does PricewaterhouseCooper fit on this? Because they're the people who verify the draft lottery.
So, anyway, Magic Johnson, I don't know what Magic's going to do, but what the Lakers do is incredibly important. Let's stop real quick, though, for an ad break, because betting on the Lakers is probably a bad idea, right? Like
right now, we don't. Yeah, I wouldn't bet on them.
Yeah, we don't, betting on anything the Lakers are going to do is probably a bad idea.
Just throwing it against the wall.
But what you should do is you should be betting on these NCAA tournament conference tournaments. It's another huge week across college basketball. It's some exciting matchups. There's only one place to get in on all this action. It's betonline.ag. Sports, casino, virtual casino, you name it. Betonline.ag is CLNS Media's preferred sportsbook online. Where are we going here? Hold on. Let me pull this up here.
Seamless reads have fallen apart on us, man.
I got something from my guy, Guy Near, here over at CLNS. He tells me that you're going to want to go to clnsmedia.com/gametheory. That is the custom URL you want to go to get your bet online 50% bonus. You're going to have to put in a promo code CLNS50 as well, I believe. But if you do that, you're going to get a 50% bonus on the money that you put in to your account. BetOnline is just fantastic. I mean, I am so excited for these conference tournaments this week. I will bet on almost every single one of them. I will bet on a winner. I'm excited to bet on DePaul to win the Big East tournament because I want chaos, and they're probably at like 20-1 right now. Okay. The best place to do that is betonline.ag. Go online or use your mobile phone to sign up today at betonline.ag. Try some in-game live betting. I do that pretty regularly too. Use that promo code CLNS50 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Betonline.ag. They are your sportsbook experts. Dieter, boom. I've also got another advertisement here.
Hit them.
We talked about fashion earlier in the podcast.
Oh, Jesus. I can already feel the pain coming my way.
And part of fashion is feeling good about your body. Part of fashion is feeling good about where you're at and how you look.
That explains so much about my fashion predicament.
66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35. And the thing is that when you notice hair loss, it's too late. If that hairline is slowly moving backwards, I've got a solution for you. It's 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. You save hours by going to 4hims.com. It really is so easy. I am a fan of 4hims.com. To order now, my listeners can get a trial month of Hims for just $5 right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/gametheory. That's forhims.com/gametheory. forhims.com/gametheory. All right, Dieter, let's get into some of these honorable mention types. We have Jimmy Butler here just because Jimmy Butler is going to really shape this upcoming title race. If you believe Philadelphia has the best starting five in the Eastern Conference, like I believe.
Okay.
He's also going to shape the free agency picture just because we don't know necessarily what his decision will be.
Beyond that, if anyone actually will want him.
I think teams will want him because he's really fucking good at basketball, but fair point.
He's certainly fallen off of that like hyper elite list, I would argue.
Yeah, like
a couple of months.
The fact that Minnesota got a lot better by getting rid of him didn't help.
And the fact that I appreciate this about his game. He's not a high usage guy, and he can affect the game in different ways. But when I watch the Sixers, I don't come away generally wowed by Jimmy Butler's impact on the contest all that often. Seems like he saves a lot for fourth quarters, and then
yeah. But that's what they ask him to do, though, I think. Like, they ask him to save for the fourth
quarter.
He's
just playing his role, and that's appreciated. It's appreciated that he's not, you know, demanding the ball more. And he's being a steady professional basketball player. There's also a lot of other stuff going on there. And I just don't think that he's going to be atop anyone's list as this is the guy we have to get. He is a backup plan for a lot of teams. Good backup plan, but still a backup plan.
Kemba Walker, does he stay in Charlotte? Charlotte is going to offer him the max. Right.
Yeah.
But is he the secondary piece for someone like the Lakers? Is he the secondary piece for the Knicks if they get their superstar free agent and Kevin Durant and Kyrie decides not to re-sign?
Is he willing to take less money to go to a theoretically better team?
Yeah, exactly. So his situation is fascinating for the offseason more than anything because, like, so we mentioned this earlier, and his deal kind of dovetails nicely with Bradley Beal, who I also have on this list. If you're the Lakers and you miss on Anthony Davis and you're the Wizards, and this is, to me, in my opinion, I don't know if Ernie Grunfeld feels this way. I don't know if Ernie Grunfeld's going to be running the team in 2 months.
Ernie Grunfeld is forever. Don't worry about that.
But the Wizards are not going to be good next year.
No, sir.
John Wall's out for the year, and if he's like doesn't miss every game next year, he is going to be recovering from an Achilles and playing himself into game shape, essentially, recovering from said Achilles injury. They don't really have much else now that they've dealt Otto Porter. I don't think Jabari Parker is staying. They're probably going to overpay Bobby Portis. So that means your decision here is to either make a one-year contender run with Bradley Beal, John Wall, and Bobby Portis, or to deal Bradley Beal this summer and get max value for him because he has 2 years left on his contract. To me, it's a no-brainer. I think you deal Bradley Beal this summer. I don't know if they feel that way, but that's what I would do. I would deal Bradley Beal and start to rebuild if I was Washington. You could get a massive package for Bradley Beal. Like, if you're the Lakers and you miss out on Anthony Davis,
you have to go right to Bradley Beal.
I think you go right to Bradley Beal. I think that you move Brandon Ingram. I think you move, like, Lonzo Ball, probably. Like, I think you move both of them in that deal, and you probably move a first-round pick for Bradley Beal.
I don't think you think too hard about it. I mean, Beal is an elite player in this league.
And he's a perfect fit. I don't know if there is a player in the NBA right now who is more of a perfect fit for LeBron than Bradley Beal.
Yeah. Then again, there's not a lot of teams where Bradley Beal isn't a great fit because he just is such an excellent, well-rounded player.
And then again, Magic Johnson hasn't exactly placed a lot of value on getting a perfect fit for LeBron James. So, like, maybe all of this is...
He got JaVale McGee. What more did you want?
Maybe all of this is theoretical in nature. But
I think
you can make a case for so many teams around the NBA to go get Bradley Beal, right? Like, you can make a case that the Clippers...
That the Warriors should go do it.
Like, the Clippers should go try and get Bradley Beal and then use their two max cap spaces and use Bradley Beal to lure those two max cap guys in. You could make a case that the Kings should go get Bradley Beal, I think, and just, like, pair him with Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox and just create,
that
like,
works out long term.
An unbelievable shooting core.
Yeah.
You can make a case, I think, that, like, even someone like San Antonio should go get Bradley Beal if they can get their pieces together. I don't think that they necessarily have the pieces, but like there are just so many different spots where his game works. Like,
we're also dealing with a front office. As you mentioned, you don't know if Ernie Grunfeld's calling the shots, but this is a team that doesn't have much interest in anything other than short-term kind of one-year deals to win the 8 seed. And yes, next year is going to suck, but they probably view next year as, well, we still have Bradley Beal. We can maybe go out and get somebody and get the 8 seed next year. And then John Wall's coming back, and God knows John Wall's an elite player in this league. We're paying him like one, so we should be A-okay down the line. So long as we keep Bradley Beal and John Wall, everything's going to be fine for the Washington Wizards. Of course, that isn't the case, but we're not dealing with rational actors.
If you're Utah, I think you should make a real offer for Bradley Beal.
What is there a team out there that you think should not?
I mean, like, you could maybe make a case for Phoenix. Like, I don't know that I would love Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, like, defending wings. I don't know if Dallas has anything left to deal for Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
Like, New Orleans, like, any team that's, like, rebuilding in the next 2 years. Like, I don't know if Atlanta should do it. Like, Atlanta probably shouldn't do it because they're trying to align their core to compete at the same time. But, like, Cleveland, again, same deal, probably shouldn't do it. If you're the Knicks, though, and you get two max free agents, and Anthony Davis gets traded to the Celtics, and you can maybe move Frank Ntilikina, Mitchell Robinson, and Kevin Knox in a pick for Bradley Beal, or, like, if you could move R.J. Barrett in one of those pieces for Bradley Beal, who will then, R.J. Barrett has 8 years of team control, that's probably worthwhile, I think. for the Wizards, right? So there are just a lot of avenues out there. He's going to be this. He would be, at least. I don't know if he's going to be. He would be the subject of a massive bidding war. That makes a lot of sense to me. Move him.
Yeah. No, listen, you don't have to convince me of it. It's just more to the effect of I don't trust the Wizards to do smart things at all.
Yeah, they're not a great organization. But what do you want me to say? Kemba. Ed,
bring it up.
But Kemba, I think, is interesting as well. We talked about Zion. Zion, where he ends up, is going to reshape the NBA in some way. If it's Atlanta or Phoenix, it creates like the next future elite team that everyone talks about. If it's Chicago, I think that a similar situation happens. It creates like the next team that everyone talks about. Minnesota, obviously, again, another team, like all of these teams that are missing the playoffs. He genuinely changes their fortunes in a significant, substantial way. If it's Dallas actually might be my favorite spot. Now that I, like, there are a lot of spots that make sense. Like, look,
what is the pick protection with
top
the,
five
the Hawks?
Top for five. Dallas. Yeah, Dallas keeps it if it's top five.
God, that would be fun.
Yeah, if they get Zion, Kristaps, and Luka Doncic, they're the next team that everyone's talking about. Phoenix is the next team. Atlanta's the next team. You know, the Knicks, if the Knicks miss out on free agency, like if Kevin Durant decides to stay, the Knicks would at least have
Zion would be helpful. Yeah,
interesting core. So it's just
it was suggested to me as part of a column I wrote that the Knicks are the Warriors' biggest threat. That if Zion and the Knicks are running away with the worst record, not that it helps their odds all that relatively, but they're locking in that 14%. It had even been suggested to me that instead of trading Zion for Anthony Davis or putting him as part of that trade package after getting, say, you know, Kyrie and Kevin Durant, that they should just keep Zion. Not, I don't think that that's a astute observation, but the fact that it can even be suggested that Zion would be better to have than Anthony Davis states how impactful people think he can be, and certainly long term, but who the hell knows? It was just an interesting, it didn't even dawn on me, and then someone brought it up, and it's like, wow, that's a bold statement, and I can't necessarily dispute it.
Yeah. Trying to think, who else do I have here? I've got James Harden, Chris Paul, Nikola Jokic, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, the Utah guys, like just these players that are in the Western Conference that will try and dethrone the Golden State Warriors, right? Like these guys will all play a role. The Warriors, I guess I would say, look more vulnerable than they have in however long in the Western Conference, 5 years now. So
yeah,
that's interesting, at least. That's something to note. I still don't think, like, part of the reason that, like, in normal years you would think that the players who impact the title race are more important than the players who impact the offseason. This year, because the Warriors are still such overwhelming favorites to win the title and should be such overwhelming favorites to win the title, it does feel like the offseason, because this is the first offseason where feels like that can substantially change, is more important. And I think that's why you look at some of the actors at the top of this list as being the guys who shaped the offseason more than the guys who shaped the title race.
Right.
But I think you have to mention the guys who shaped the title race as well. Nikola Jokic, like if he is playoff god, right. I am skeptical of how his game's going to translate in the playoffs defensively. But like,
not optimistic.
If it does translate for whatever reason, then he has to be mentioned here. Like Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Paul George is probably what, third, maybe fourth in the MVP race right now?
Yeah, that stretch where he was out cooled off a lot of the Jets. But yeah, he's in it. He's certainly in the race.
Yeah. Houston, James Harden and Chris Paul.
I mean, are they Houston, they're probably the top threat to the Warriors right now. So
you
would have
Houston
to,
has been great.
Yeah.
Houston has been great over the course of the last month and a half. So I look at all of this as fascinating in terms of, can someone finally knock off the Warriors? I'm skeptical. I don't think it's going to happen this year. But
the Warriors will essentially knock themselves off. They have to come down to meet everyone else's level. That is something that could very well happen. The question is, who could take advantage of a situation like that? So yeah, the players that you just mentioned are the leaders of teams like that. I don't think Denver's necessarily of that class, but Houston, Oklahoma City, that's a 1-2 that if the Warriors aren't right for that series, and that series seems inevitable against at least one of those two teams, they could absolutely lose that. And this is something to where I mentioned the negative spirit of this team. There's still 16 games left in the regular season for the Warriors, but they are playing bottom third defense right now in the NBA. Their offense is clunky and disjointed at times because they're overfeeding DeMarcus Cousins in the low post. There is a bad vibe. There's a bad energy around this team. And if that doesn't change, that's the kind of stuff that can undercut a great team come playoff time. If you go down 2-1 in a series and you got all this negative, bad energy, it can go one of two ways, but you don't bet on a team with bad energy in a situation like that to come through in the clutch, even though they have done it time and time again. This is a team that is exceptional at dicking around. We saw it in last year's Western Conference Finals, where they had to go and have exceptional second halves against the Rockets in game 6 and 7 to not just stave off elimination, but win the series in and of itself. I don't know if Chris Paul changes the calculus at all, no more so perhaps than Andre Iguodala would have, but there are the gap between the Warriors and the rest of the Western Conference, I don't think is as large as it has been in prior years because of the Warriors' lack of depth and because of that bad energy. And if there are a couple of guys in the Western Conference that decide this is it and they put together their best year in the postseason, this postseason, we're not talking about the Warriors coasting to a championship. We're talking about another team coming out of the Western Conference.
So, and the team that we haven't mentioned here, by the way, in any of this podcast, is the team with the best record in the NBA right now, the Bucks.
Yeah, this is something that I'm going to rally for the next month until the playoffs start, which is we do not talk about the Bucks enough. Yeah. They're doing historic shit. Are they the best team in the NBA?
Right now, they are playing like the best team in the NBA.
Yeah.
They have the number 3 offense. They have the number 1 defense. But yeah, the reason that there is still skepticism about this is even like among NBA circles, like with you talk to NBA executives as much as I do, like there is still concern about if this team is a regular season team or if they're a team that can be successful in the regular season and the playoffs. And part of that is, can they adjust to what other teams present them? And look, we talked about all the best players in the Western Conference that are going to shape the Western Conference playoff race. We could say, like, Giannis Antetokounmpo is probably going to be the MVP of the NBA this year, given the way the Bucks have played. Should be the MVP, in my opinion. He is going to play a role here. He needs to be mentioned. But to me, the guy who's going to play a bigger role in all of this is Mike Budenholzer. Mike Budenholzer, throughout his career, really, has been not a guy who plays like switching defense at all. And I think that once you get into a playoff series, like if you're Boston, for instance, and you can pose problems for Milwaukee by exploiting their defense where they sink their pick and roll guy all the way back into the paint, and you have Jason Tatum who will just happily roll around a screen and knock down an 18-footer, like this stuff is important, I think, in terms of how the Bucks are willing to adjust. Are the Bucks willing to adjust? Mike Budenholzer, over his playoff career, has not been fantastic at this. How quickly is he willing to go to a switching defense with a roster that is, by the way, tailor-made?
Super switchable. Like it's stupid how switchable they are. I don't understand why he doesn't go with it, but that's just me.
Well, I understand because he's had success. They are the number one defense in the NBA. They should not go with it right now. But there are going to be times in the playoffs where it's going to make sense to switch. And really, they do only have like two lineups, realistically, that can switch. They all involve Giannis at the 5.
Yes.
You probably need Chris Middleton at the 4 unless you're willing to play DJ Wilson in the playoffs. DJ
Wilson particularly would be an excellent 4 in that situation if you are trying to
play
lineup on the court.
They haven't really been willing to play him as much recently.
Which I don't get.
Well, it's because they got Nikola Mirotic. They got Ersan Ilyasova back playing a little bit better recently. And will be interesting to see what they do with Pau Gasol, right?
They're playing Pau over Wilson right now. And it's like Wilson is, I don't know, maybe this is just me
DJ
holding
Wilson
on.
Wilson is a better player than Pau Gasol right now.
There's no question in my mind. Like, DJ Wilson was found money for this team. And he is just absolutely like the the epitome of a Bucks player. He's stupid long. He can do the basic stuff right. He's got a little plus. Like he's a super poor man's Pascal Siakam in a way. I mean, way further back on the development curve, but like you can see these sparks that get you really excited about what this guy could be down the line. And now he's relegated to the bench. I just don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, like, just you can look at the player type that like the Bucks bring in, and I think it in large part has to do with what Mike Budenholzer wants, right? Nikola Mirotic, Pau Gasol, Brook Lopez. Like,
I'm not sure what Pau Gasol. I mean,
he wants Ershan Ilyasova. Ershan Ilyasova is like the tailor-made Mike Budenholzer guy.
He just wants a dude who's willing to stand outside the 3-point line. Like, what are we saying?
He likes here? Like, you know, quote unquote cerebral slow white dudes who will run his scheme.
That worked out great in Atlanta,
right? Like, so I don't know what to make of all of this. I'm going to be fascinated to see if he's willing to go with more of the switching lineup, if he's willing to try and do things that make more sense realistically in a playoff series.
If he's willing to play 2019 basketball.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because at some point he's going to have to. Like, he's just going to have to. So,
no, he doesn't. He doesn't have to do shit.
I think at some point he's going to have to, but that's just me.
Okay. That's logic speaking. We're that goes for us.
That's about all I've got on this list here. Is there anyone else you want to mention?
No, man. We went through it. That was it's disjointed, and it was a hot mess. But these are the players, man. Like, this is a weird time in the NBA.
It's a weird NBA year. Yeah, it really is.
It's so weird. And just looking at this list, like Kawhi Leonard, an NBA Finals MVP, a guy who could have won an NBA MVP not too long ago, a guy who was the epicenter of drama and intrigue this time last year in some ways, is fourth on this list. And yep. I mean, that's just crazy. And Magic Johnson's on it. Like, what the hell's going on? There's a lot of shit that's happened over the last year, man. And it seems like this trend isn't one that's going to go away. So I need to start reading like Us Weekly and watching the Kardashians to perhaps better understand how to handle this new world NBA that we're dealing with.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here? I saw Captain Marvel last Friday.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. I loved it.
That's awesome. Okay, well, I'll go see it then.
I legit thought it. I was questionable like for the first half hour, and then it really came together. I thought it was fantastic. Really, really good.
Okay, good to know. I haven't heard terrible things. The worst I've heard is meh, which that's fine. I mean, there's some stuff that's going to blow up, so I'll take meh.
Yeah. So like, look, it hasn't been a great year of 2019 movies so far.
Nope.
But like, I have it ahead of Velvet Buzzsaw as my favorite movie right now.
Not a high bar.
Yeah, it's not a high bar, but like, you know, solid A-minus movie, I thought.
Yeah, it counts. Yeah. No, like, that's good. That's good.
Good movie.
I'll go see it in the next couple of days. It's shown around the corner, so that's good times. I mean, other than Trent Brown becoming the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history, because John Gruden's got a John Gruden, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in this world. Things are crazy right now. I'm going to go see if the Warriors haven't all beaten the shit out of each other. That's what I'm going to go do this afternoon.
That'd be nice if they haven't done that.
It would be nice on a human level, but you know, to quote Darren Rovell, this is bad for our country, but it is tremendous content.
Oh no. Dealer, tell the people where they can find your work.
The San Jose Mercury News, the East Bay Times, it's all part of the Bay Area News Group, and you can find me on Twitter at @dkurtenbach, where I am much more cogent and energetic.
Go to iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Android, wherever you listen to podcasting content. Please, please subscribe, rate, review this podcast. Go to The Athletic. Keep me employed over there as well. That'd be nice.
You've been killing it. You've been killing it with those coach interview stories, man. I mean, that was good stuff.
And I'm also going to be doing some like team-based offseason/draft previews. I've written the first one already. It's on the Knicks. We're trying to decide how we want to roll it out and everything. So that'll be coming at some point here. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.